Good morning. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and I hope you will give us a call. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. I'll do a better job. Last week we had a couple, which I will be reading this week. They just didn't come in, or I didn't see them come in until it was too late. So I'll get to those, and I will endeavor to get to those on the breaks, okay? That's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Now, in the second hour, I'm going to talk about this, and I want to kind of tease it a little bit, if you will, or if you will, start getting some of those thoughts going in your head, all right? I think it's really important to really think about what you think about. I know when I ask myself that question, what am I thinking about and spending my time thinking about? You know, I mean, the Bible actually refers to it this way. You know, where it's what's in your heart. What you're always talking about, what you're always thinking about. I love baseball. I love it. That's what you're thinking about. But why is that important to know where your heart is, right? When you're talking about investments. And the answer is, think about all the inputs, right? And we'll come back to this, like I said, in more detail in the next hour. But if we're sitting around and reading and thinking about, like, say, inflation, right? I'm really worried about inflation. And we're reading it. Then we're spending our time thinking about it. Could we be missing everything else? And I would argue, of course you can. Of course you will. Because you've talked yourself into a set outcome. Are we really open then for other inputs? So let's think about what we think about. Where are we spending our time and our thought? Where is it? All right, so I'll come back in the second hour. But I wanted to talk a little bit about income, because it's always this talk, and really here's to this point, okay? And this comes from Frank. Frank, thanks for the email. I'm sorry I didn't get to it last week. I'm 85, pardon me, and have $600,000 extra. I'm in the stock market with all I want to be. Where would you recommend the money be invested today? I'm looking at a low-risk place to park it. Okay, thank you for the email. How about a million questions that brings up, right? I mean, a million questions. How safe is safe, right? I mean, you know, can we take a little bit of risk? Low risk implies yes. Some people are like, but what risk level am I talking about versus somebody else? And so it's difficult. We have to have that discussion. But I'm going to generally say this. When people are looking at that, how do I get return? Without any price volatility, which is how everybody defines risk, right? They do. I don't. I think it's, the risk is I won't have the money to do what I want to do on a cost of living adjusted basis. If I can't grow it, I'm shrinking it. That's not low risk. That's losing money every year. Willingly. I don't want to do that. But when we're talking about buying into, let's say, the whole market, we're not talking about absolute all loss. Or it doesn't matter what you invest in. It's all gone, right? It's not a function of here's all you can lose, like all of it. It doesn't work that way. So when we're putting money into the market, can it go down in the short term? So that's why I say it's always based on price when people are talking about it. So let's go with that. And then we have to further define it, though, Frank, and say, look, if we're going to put this away, can you handle a little downside? Because even if you bought bonds, they most certainly change in value every single day. Not a lot, but they change every single day. And the more interest you want, the longer duration you have, the more volatile the bonds are. So I'm going to give you kind of an answer. It's one I think you're going to have to, you know, again, you have to think about a little bit here, right? If we put that into real estate, and I don't mean you go buy a building. I absolutely don't mean that. But I mean a combination of publicly traded, meaning real estate businesses, and privately held, the kind that give you a tremendous amount of liquidity, meaning you can get out every quarter. That's how most of them operate. They're called interval funds. And that way you have your money spread out, literally coast to coast, multiple different kinds, from healthcare real estate to office buildings, although now everybody hates real office buildings, and so most of them don't hold much right now. But you get the point, whether it's data centers, all those things that are held. And for the liquidity part, some of it is in stocks, real estate stocks. But the amount of volatility it takes out is absolutely tremendous. And so maybe you can kind of wrap your mind around that and look at it, because they're yielding somewhere, some are a little more and less, around 5%. And it depends on how growthy they are, if it's more. And of course, real estate over time has a little bit of a growth. So, a couple percent for inflationary growth. I think you'll do pretty well, and it'll be very low volatility price. Not no volatility, but very low. And I think that's a place you might want to think about, because, Frank, it's so hard to answer a question that just says, oh, I got it right over here, go do that. Because we know in a zero interest rate world, a potentially rising interest rate as well, it's really tough to find anything that's yielding anything. Hopefully that's helpful. And if not, then you hold me accountable, and we'll plan on answering that question further, okay? All right. Let me go ahead and go to the phones here. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Thank you.
Now, you brought up a subject of thinking about what you're thinking about, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, that would be a good one probably to ask. I mean, I'm kind of a solitary person. As you know, I'm very outspoken, but I'm solitary, which leads me to be extremely healthy physically, but I'm not so sure mentally.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, you know, if you don't focus your attention outward, you focus it inward. And then, you know, I start thinking about everything that could be wrong with my body, for instance. You know, maybe I've got high blood pressure, maybe my heart, you know, and I think of how old I am. And you start thinking about all these things internally, which is not good. And the best thing I like to do is get on my bicycle and ride. But if you start thinking too much internally, and, you know, the weird thing about it is, if you're, for instance, married and you have a spouse, okay, that doesn't negate problems. I mean, you could have domestic problems, I mean, you know, conflicts and all that kind of thing. But anyway, if you're secluded too much, you start thinking too much internally.
That's an honest assessment from a single guy. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I also, and obviously we're going to talk about this in the next hour as to, you know, why this matters so much in finance, right? It is because we sit around and worry about things. But I know personally, if you sit there thinking about yourself, you can worry about all the things that maybe you said or did that were wrong, and you can actually work yourself into quite a depression. It's not healthy for us to always be by ourselves, that's for sure, and be in our own thoughts. It's not healthy.
Right. So, you know, and I'm an analyzer and a philosopher and all sorts of things, you know. I was on Facebook briefly for a while, but I'm too contradictory, right? I'll put up my anti-vaccine theories, and I decided to get off Facebook.
Yes, well, you apparently did before they kicked you off, because I'm thinking well, anti-vax stuff is going to be probably banned by Facebook, right?
Well, you know what's weird? What's weird is, I mean, one of the things I've done a lot, you know, and this comes from watching the movie The Great Race with Professor Fate, he used the term, you idiot. And so I'll use you idiot all the time. I call myself an idiot all the time.
Yeah, me too.
Well, anyway, I made the mistake of calling this supposed doctor that disagreed with me, you idiot, just out of whatever, just out of habit. and all of a sudden got some negative feedback. Well, maybe I'd best get off Facebook.
That's not a nice word.
No, it's not. It's not. And I didn't. Well, anyway, it wasn't meant the way everybody would take it.
I understand. And as my lovely wife says all the time, be nice to yourself. She knows I'm very harsh on myself too. And self-talk is part of what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Well, that's another thing. A lot of times I'll do something stupid to myself or be forgetful or whatever, and I'm always calling myself an idiot. So.
Yeah, I know. That's what you said. That reminded me of me doing the same thing. All right.
Take care.
You take care. You be careful in your own head.
It's a dangerous journey. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We need to take a quick break here, and when we come back, feel free to give us a call. We'd love to visit with you. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. Dave at petsofinancial.net. Let's go to Frank. Frank, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Could you just give me a quick rundown of a good, bad, ugly, or reverse mortgage? I have a house that's paid for here, and I'd like to get a small condo closer to grandkids out of state. So not sure if I want to sell or leave the area, but maybe a quick rundown on that.
Yeah, I'll do the best I can, Frank. It's a very complicated, and there's a whole lot more to what you're saying. In other words,
sure.
There may be some other alternatives to think about that you could do to accomplish both, right?
Uh-huh.
And let me just toss a couple of things out that immediately come to mind, and then you can kind of just put that in your mix, right? So if you're going to be gone for quite a while at this other condo, have you thought about renting it out? Is it possible to do that for periods of time while you're gone? And then that would more than cover potentially the cost of two ownerships, those types of things, and then not lock you into it. So it's just a thought. Okay, but there may be some other thoughts as well, right? Like if you're going to be here for short periods of time, would it be, and mostly at this condo or what have you, I just don't know the travel schedule. Maybe it's better to sell here now into a red hot market and rent here when you want to come back for short periods. I don't know your lifestyle. Those are the kind of things that I think you should weigh out before you say, this is the house I'm going to be at even though I'm only here 4 months a year. Kind of thing. Okay. Now,
yeah, sure.
Let's jump into that. Now the main thing is cost. It's just really, there's a lot of fees up front to set up a reverse mortgage, a ton of fees. And, because if real estate drops in price and it did in 2008 and the banks were left holding the cat, you know, it was just terrible. It was a terrible time. So you wind up with a circumstance there for the banks. They won't loan as much. And there's a much higher interest rate on it because of the fear. And that's right. You know, it's a highly competitive market. So that means the price is not fixed. It's highly competitive and a good bargain. But it's really based on cost. A lot of fees up front and a higher interest rate. And it's compounding against you, of course, even as a house might be depreciating in value. So there isn't going to be a lot left over, in my mind, when you're gone. Now, the advantage, of course, is you may not care at all about that. You may say, I don't have any heirs. I totally don't care about that. Or they're all taken care of. They're doing well on their own or whatever you want to say. So as we reverse that and say, what are the positives? It basically is a self-depreciating asset. It's going to pay you income and you're going to be able to hang on to it. You don't need to, in your case, I don't know why the reverse mortgage is there. Maybe it's to pay it off, right? So you don't have any house payments anymore. There's a lot of things there that can improve your cash flow either in a form of an actual income or in the form of you paying off your mortgage with it. So the it's really a cash flow question, and the positive on that positive is like, I need more money to live. This is my biggest asset. I'm going with that. And Frank, that's the big advantage. The disadvantage is on the fees. It's much more complex than I just made it, and I think you know that, but that's the positive and negative, okay? And I always look for better solutions first or different solutions first before paying all those costs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, very much so, very much so. Is this something your office handles, or do I need to go other places?
We help people think it through as a financial advisors, right? But it's not something we actually offer those reverse mortgages. So you probably ought to get your information directly from them. If you need some help thinking it through, give us a call. Okay?
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thanks, Dave.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call, Frank. Have a good day.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-KIDO. Obviously, you can hear the music. It's ringing in my ears, too. We're going to be back in the next hour. And I really do want everybody to be thinking about this at the break, okay? Think about what you think about. Let's talk about what our self-talk is, right? It's so important. What kind of inputs we're getting. We'll talk to you after the news. Hello and good morning. Thank you for joining us. And of course, as I always say, these are my opinions only. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, or sell. And if we mention something favorable about Apple or some other company, it doesn't mean you ought to run out and buy it. I don't know anything about your portfolio, and I'm not suggesting that anything is a buy. We might say something like, we probably will, certainly have in the past. The way you have a company like Apple worth 10 or 20 times what you paid for it is you own it. You don't trade it. And that really takes us right into what I want to talk about for a moment here in thinking about things, right? Okay. In other words, what I want to think about what I'm thinking about. What is it that's rattling around in my head? What am I thinking about? Because probably what I'm thinking about is totally related to, I understand we have moments where something impacts our thinking. I'm talking about something that I'm grinding on probably too much. What's wrong with the world? And I'm just thinking about it, and I'm reading about it, and I'm getting all the inputs I can, right? I'm on the internet. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah, there's a conspiracy theory. I believe in that one. Oh, yeah, we're about to have hyperinflation. That's all the inputs I've got, okay? And so then I'm like on a walk or whatever. And what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about all those inputs. Now, the question is this. Not to be Pollyannish about this, but are these positive thoughts that I'm thinking about? I mean, am I living my life with great joy, for example? Or are these thoughts making it impossible to have joy? Because they're consuming all of my bandwidth, if you will. This is what I'm spending my time thinking about. And this really affects us in finance, terribly so. What are you getting your inputs for? If you're thinking the world is ending, that's what the inputs are, right? So the inputs are coming in, the world is ending. It's bad, 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 bad. Okay, all right. And then our other time, that's what we're thinking about. Now, does that make it really easy to hear a positive input? Or do we just shut it down? I think we shut it down. Otherwise, the world would not be full, and I don't mean full as in all, but there's zillions of permabears. People that never, ever liked the market, never liked the economy. Everything's always wrong. Because in their filter, everything is wrong. Now, it's okay to maybe hear one thing from them, but I really don't want to hear only from people that have a complete bias. It's all wrong. And hearing from them and thinking about them and what they must think about all the time is they must be thinking about what's wrong all the time. They have no clarity of thought at all, so why do I really care what they think? I don't, honestly. Without clarity of thought, I'm really not learning anything from that person. All they've done is dug up more data on the same stuff that they were worried about 20 years ago, 10 years ago, last year. Next month, that's what they're going to be worried about. They're finding things to always be worried about. You don't have to look very hard for what to worry about. It's like it's there all the time, but it's our news flow. It's constant. And so if we want to think about what you're thinking about, you have to try to rise above and go, oh my gosh, if you're not saying amen to this, you're not really doing an honest self-analysis of what our self-talk is. It's terrible. We're crappy self-talkers. We really are. We really are. I mean, this is this like nightmare of negativism going on in all of our heads all the time. It's pretty hard not to. Why do you think to a child grandparents are so special? Because for that time, we just think that the world is the greatest thing in the whole wide world with those kids, because we do. We do. And so we exude that. The kids exude it back, and it's just like this wonderful, incredible experience, right? If we're trying to invest and we're trying to have a clarity of what's going on in the world, ask yourself what you're thinking about. If it's always in fear and worry, the world's going to end. We got Joe Biden in the presidency and that's the end of it, right? We got the Chinese over here. That's the end of it. Nothing good can happen. They're just print money and spend money, and it's all going to go away to inflation. These are all real concerns. But is it all you think about? Because if so, you might be missing that the world is opening. You might be missing that no matter who the president is, the economy will boom. You might be missing that Apple really doesn't care, or let me rephrase it this way, it doesn't affect how many iPhones are going to sell in 21 and 22. Who's in the White House? I know it matters about tax rates and all those other things and regulations and blah, blah, blah. I get it. And I get that the long-term trajectory, that's not good. But you miss it if all you do is live in what's wrong. You miss it. And it's already human nature. It's our nature, our very being that says, I believe, I gravitate towards, I got to get more information on what's wrong, what could kill me, or at least my pile of money. It's how we're wired. So if anything, we have to be thinking about, not just think about what you think about, but would you quit thinking about that stuff and let's flip it over and think about some nice things. And I don't just mean make them up. It's not impossible to go, yep, the world is reopening. You see, if you didn't make that simple statement, that very simple statement, for the past 12 months, literally. Yeah, but we weren't reopening for 12. I get it, but the market's thinking forward. Don't live in the now when you're talking about investments. Live in the future, even though you can't be right about what the future is precisely. It's directional that you have to be thinking about. Is the world growing? Are we going to open up? Are we going to have vaccines? If all you ever did was watch MSNBC, you're still sitting at home by yourself wearing a mask. Because for over a year, all they've done is scare the snot out of you that if you go near another human being, undoubtedly you're going to get coronavirus. And the people that watch that, by the way, I mean, there's been study after study, have no clue how deadly it is, or not deadly, coronavirus is. And this isn't, I'm not here to run through all the science with you or diminish the fact that hundreds of thousands of people have died of coronavirus. It's a serious thing. And it's easily spread. Easily spread. Clearly, this is a big deal. I'm not diminishing it. But the idea that you can never leave your house, the idea is if you had it, you're probably going to get it again. It goes against all of the science of all of history, but they sold it. People still wouldn't go anywhere, even if they had coronavirus. Oh, that turned out that antibodies are still in people's bodies and blah, blah, blah. But doesn't change it. They never have to apologize for phony science or for the beatdown, the constant negative beatdown. So the more you spend your time in front of a bunch of bears on CNBC scratching their beards and looking really concerned about fill in the blank about the market, A, the more unhappy you're going to be in your life and the more certain you're going to be of why you're sitting on cash, losing money to inflation year after year, and you've missed the last 15,000 points on the Dow. Maybe 25,000 points. But you're right. You're still right. They're right. They've got good facts in front of them. But we never can see through to the fact of something as simple as saying, someday we're either going to reach herd immunity or those vaccines, I believe, are coming. Now, you don't look back in hindsight and go, yeah, see, I told you they would, because nobody had the timeline. But what we knew is it wasn't going to be 4 years. We knew that. We knew that early on because they were doing things and releasing data that just made our heads spin. It was just unbelievable how fast the vaccines were coming. Because we have new science. And people are getting it. And now they're coming up with therapies, so not as many people die. All good stuff. But not if you're watching TV. It's never going to get better. We have to think about all of the inputs and quit worrying so much all the time. It's so easy to worry as humans. We have to look at the other side of the coin all the time. I know all the bears out there, all the negative Nellies, all the people who are just grounding that. Leave me alone. I just want to be miserable, and I want to get on the dark web. That's what I want to do. That's who I am. Quit fussing with me. If you want to be there, I hear you. But don't say, oh, it's just happy talk. It's just dancing past, singing past the graveyard, whistling past the graveyard, all those things. It's not true. We've talked about this stuff. I've now been doing this for 40 years. It's the same stuff in the 1980s. Oh, it's different iterations of the same thing. We're going to inflation. We're going to the devaluation of the dollar. We're spending too much in the deficit spending. It's all the same. And then you go, well, yeah. And then someday, are we going to reach that point? Yes, we are going to reach that point. I don't know when. But if we can't balance all of that negative energy with some simple thoughts, we're hopeless in our decision-making ability. Hopeless. All we end up doing is confirmation bias. We just go and we read the things that already agree with us, and we become experts at one side of the argument. Not experts at thinking, not experts at reasoning things through. Actually having, because thinking is hard. It's truly hard. I know what I know, but am I capable of stopping and saying, no, I need to rethink that. That person over there is another human being, has done a lot of thought, and completely disagrees with me. I need to do that. And it's hard to do that, because probably that person, certainly in my mind, is a moron. They're absolutely a moron. They have no idea. They haven't done any good reading. I've got it all. I've got all the data points. But you know what happens once in a while? You flip that coin over and you look at the other side. All that certainty, you start to really realize where another point of view could come from. It deepens your thought. It can deepen your conviction. That's wrong. That's good. And that's a good exercise to have. But you don't just deepen your conviction by proving them wrong. You have to be thinking about it. And you think about that in the markets. Why is the market going higher? How can it be with inflation fears? With a guy like Joe Biden in office, raising taxes, regulations. We're trying to make sure we are not energy independent anymore. These can't be good things for the economy. Bam. You're right. They're not. None of them are. They're terrible for the economy. They're terrible for freedom. They're terrible for this country. It has almost nothing to do with the stock market day to day. Nothing. Except keeping you out of it. Good job. Thanks for all the data that the news and what you view has done for you. It's not deepened our thinking, deepened our knowledge. It has resisted learning anything, absolutely anything, except more data points to argue what you already believe in. That's not learning anything. And when we get in that, it's why people go and buy equity indexed annuities. Why? Because they're so worried about everything else, they just want the word guarantee. It's why people will sit there on cash. Cash! There's like tens of trillions of dollars in the world losing money every year. Some of it, like literally all of it after inflation. Literally losing money. but I'm not losing at all. Okay, great. Good strategy. And I'm sure you'll come in at, I don't know, Dow 63,000? I don't know. What is the trigger that brings in it? Well, there isn't one if the inputs continue to make sure that we are thinking about all the bad things. So let's think about what we think about. It's really important because that's where our heart is. That's what we're spending all of our time on. And I know from my perspective, I don't want to spend a lot of time there. It's not healthy for me. It's not happy for me. It's not a happy place. It's one of the reasons I cut out most of the news now. It's a lot easier to digest the Wall Street Journal than a dreadful loop of negativity 24/7. I got a lot of work to do. I think we all do. But we got to spend more time thinking about what we think about and trying to change some of those inputs instead of just living in this, I have a better argument for why the world's going to end than you do. Trillions and trillions of dollars sitting there in cash is not there because that's an investment choice. It's there because of fear. Fear. It affects every aspect of our life, and I think it really affects finance. I really do. We just can't get people to invest. It makes no sense at all. None. All of history says this works and works perfectly well. Bumps around in price and grows by 10% a year. And you don't have to do a thing for it. Nothing else is close to it. And we sit in cash? Doesn't make sense. I believe it's because we think about the wrong things all the time. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, please give us a call. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. We'd love to hear from you. Plenty of time left in today's programs to take your calls and your thoughts, right? Okay, we talked about some heavy thinking there, didn't we? What am I thinking about? I know when I think about what I'm thinking about, a little smoke comes out of my ears sometimes. It's hard. I'm just thinking what I'm thinking, right? Anyway, interesting question in my mind. I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk about this, though. We last week got an email. Mike, thank you for your patience. Sorry I didn't get to it this week. And a very good question. Are there any ETFs, exchange-traded funds, for commodities, or do you have to play the dangerous game of futures contracts? And that is a dangerous game. ETFs that play in futures contracts. Now, they do that. Mike, thank you for the question. Let me try to answer this in a couple different ways. Now, obviously, this comes from concern about inflation, that commodities do well. Now, commodities trading is an interesting thing because it's done in many cases with very low leverage, although commodities are highly leveraged themselves. So I don't want to be confusing. I don't want to sound like a politician on the one hand, on the other hand. But when you put them into ETFs, exchange-traded funds, you do sink the cost of this pool of assets. It was a very expensive place to be. Years ago, they've been around for a long time. I shouldn't say years ago, but years ago, I looked into them from a diversification standpoint, right? They call them alternatives because they don't move with the market. They don't have any correlation with stocks. So when stocks go down, they could go down or up. They don't have opposite correlation. They have no correlation. Well, with all the expenses, low interest rates, because so much cash has to be held and that's earning nothing, these things have not worked for years. They have not worked well at all. But now we're in this phase where commodities are rising a lot, and they tend to be momentum-based, right? Meaning if something's going up, they believe it'll keep going higher. And so, and as long as they stay in that trend, they make lots and lots of money. Those are now available in exchange-traded funds for much lower cost. I'm not a believer in it. I just want people to know about it. I'm not a disbeliever either. I just have a struggle because of the performance history of these things has not been strong. But the answer also basically, Mike, is that these, even within the ETFs, sure, there's baskets of just holding corn and oil and things like that, but almost all of them really are active traders, and I would actually go with active trading versus just passively holding them. I understand the question, and I will be circling later in today's program probably into some inflationary discussion here about what types of things to own. I know everybody points to commodities, and I'll be a little bit of a spoiler here. I don't think commodities in the long run have any inflation protection at all. History says it doesn't. In the short run, we have high inflation. You might get a boost in oil prices. You might get a boost in copper and other things like that, like we're having now. But certainly inflation-adjusted prices of all commodities, all of them, have gone down over my lifetime. Inflation-adjusted prices, that doesn't sound like an inflation hedge to me. So once again, I beg us all, myself included, to think, right? We have to learn how to think and not just accept that this is the rule. A 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio with a 4% draw rate, cost of living adjusted, has a 90% certainty of working during your lifetime. No, it doesn't today. It does not. I don't care what you learned 30 years ago. I absolutely don't care. If you go to Vanguard's website and it shows you with a billion calculations in a second Monte Carlo simulation that your chances of success are 92.3. They are not. Not when interest rates on 10-year treasuries are at 1.6. They're not. 40% of your money at 1.6 is not going to work for a 4% draw rate. Like ever. And you know what? I don't need a spreadsheet to prove that. It's called flipping logic. Duh. A child knows that. Put nearly half of my money over here and it's not even earning what I'm taking out? Wrong. Won't work. Period. End of story. And this still goes around all the time. We have to think. And so when we say commodities do well in inflation, yeah, for a day. But the reality is all my life they've come down. Because we figure out better ways to get it out of the ground, cheaper ways, more competition. So in the short run, like we are right now, supply chain issues, all these companies slowed down their production. Why? Because coronavirus. And now the economy's picking up and they can't keep up with demand. Do I think that's a permanent state, that we will not be able to figure out how to get copper out of the ground? I don't. It certainly hasn't been the history. But in the moment, we all say that. Inflation protection by commodities. I don't think that's really the direction we want to go. Mike, hopefully I helped a little bit, and I thank you for the question. It's dave@petsofinancial.net if you have an email question. It's 580-KIDO. If you want to talk live, we'd love to bring you up. We're going to go ahead and take a break here for Fox News. It's 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, that's our number. And our email, of course, is dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Terry. Terry, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
We've got music going on in the background, Professor.
Oh, gotcha. You're good. We got you.
Boy, howdy. It confused me, and that's easy to do these days. So how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. Very well.
Setting up, you were talking earlier about bonds, and one thing that's never set in my pea brain is the inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the corollary or the second add-on to that was you were talking interval funds versus, does that replace a bond ladder?
Great question. Okay. And so, first of all, think of interest rates and bond prices as a teeter-totter. That's the best way I can visualize, right? So when interest rates go up on the teeter-totter, the price goes down. Okay. And here's why. If you have a 2% bond of whatever kind, all things being equal, no change in credit or what's going on in the world, right? and interest rates rise to 3%, who's going to pay you full price for a 2% bond when they can go get a 3%? So that's thus the inverse correlation, okay? Now, part two of your question was what now?
Oh, you were talking about interval funds.
Yeah.
With realty and real estate and such.
Yeah, because you can't have privately held real estate that you can have daily access to cash in. You can't. You could potentially, like at the beginning of the pandemic, have a run on the bank, so to speak. And then everybody who wants to stay would be forced to sell out large buildings on a dime, right? You can't do that. So combining it by saying every quarter you can redeem, not every day like a mutual fund does, right? Gives them time to put a cap on how much can come out each quarter, right? And so you can't have a run in the bank, and also raise the cash during that period to go ahead and let people liquidate. That's what an interval is. It's not a daily. It's daily priced as you can buy in and you know what your value is, but you have quarterly liquidations. Some of them are annual, I'm sure, but that's what the interval is. I've not seen an annual. I'm just saying that there's nothing magic about quarterly. Maybe they'll come up with a monthly one too. I don't know.
But
you'll have intervals instead of daily. It allows them to hold non-traditional assets, meaning non-highly liquid assets. For example, real estate would be private REITs. In other words, there's these big blocks out there, and you hear people talk about it once in a while. Harvard and Yale and other endowments, right? They want a steady payout, but they don't go out and buy buildings, not typically. They'll buy into these REITs because they're professionally managed, and they can say, we want to buy $100 million worth of office buildings, and they're located coast to coast, and they're managed, and they're maybe getting a 5 or 6% cash flow from them, and then they hope to have a little bit of inflationary increase over time. It helps them make their typically 5% payouts, and that's why they like real estate. They don't own it all, but in those cases, that's not liquid. Okay, now what the clever people have done is for the average person, for a fee, they can come in and create a mutual fund. And so they pick up management fees to create a mutual fund of both public, which are regular stocks, and private real estate. And then package it together so they provide quarterly liquidity, but they also are able to buy assets that are non-traditional. And the reason I bring it up is it's a good inflationary one. It has very low of volatility of price. Those kinds of things. It doesn't guarantee results or anything like that. You're still owning real estate that goes up and down every day in price, meaning like 20% of its publicly traded companies that you and I can go buy on the New York Stock Exchange every day. That is a combination with the private, which isn't priced every day, and therefore creates a great stability and a great cash flow. That's the reason why, as a bond alternative, I feel much better about that. And that's why when I was talking about the 85-year-old who has $600,000 extra, that's another place to just kind of look at. Okay?
I'm still coming back to rolling around in my pea brain that we're coming back to the simple Charlie Brown answer. Mm-hmm. Oh, diversification works in many ways.
Yes, it does. It does. It does. It absolutely does. But for many people, that diversification is including way too much cash. And I want to minimize cash because I want to minimize my positions that guarantee I am losing money. Guarantee.
Right. Remember the government's bright idea of the tips.
Yes, exactly. That's another one that's really not worked. And thank you for that because I was going to talk about alts. Maybe I'll talk about it. But what does well with inflation? Tips do, but they don't because they're always priced ahead, right? Markets outthinking people. But
as the late great Mr. Limbaugh says, we're just here to make the host look good. So,
well, thanks for your input.
All right, David, you have a good weekend,
All
sir.
All right, thanks for making me look good, Terry. Have a good day.
All right, bye. Bye.
And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. And that brings me back to another email real quick because I did reference that first call and the person being 85 years old, Frank, actually, and putting in $600,000 extra but not in the stock market. So that's where this all came up. Two things. One, the question is, the follow-up email is, does that apply to 85-year-olds or 65? It depends on life expectancy. Is that what you're, does it depend on life expectancy? The answer is no. It depends on what you want that piece of diversification, if you will, what kind of volatility or income you're looking for on that piece. I think it should never all be there. And I certainly had no impression from Frank's email that the $600,000 he has is anywhere near all he has, right? It doesn't sound like it. He's got all the stocks he wants. Now, what else can we do? And I'm not going to say I think you should go lose money every single day to inflation by buying or owning cash or you know, like a CD. It makes no sense at all to me. None. Now, it might make sense to you, and it's your money, it's your life, and that's fine. But I want to try to find alternatives, and that's what I'm trying to bring forward. These things trade like mutual funds. They're not these large public REITs that take out 10% or 15% of the money raised in commissions. These are not remotely like that. They're not that. So I certainly don't, and I'm not here to sell anybody on that idea, just giving an alternative, okay? All right, now let's go ahead. Let's take Robert's call. Robert, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dave. One question I have is typically what a lot of people I know question is how much can they rely on if they buy stock and they pay dividends on it?
Mm-hmm.
How can we rely on that to all of a sudden just stop?
Oh, it's a great
no more
question.
Income.
Yeah. Here's what I would do, okay? And I've got that data here, but and I think what I'll do is I'll probably how about I save that for next week or the week after to go through all that, because it's an income story that we do. And I just want, because I think it'll how reliant is it? Historically, it's been very reliable. The dividends on the S&P 500, the S&P 500 is probably the best measurement of the big name companies in America. It is cap weighted and all the other problems that it has, but basically we're talking about companies that have gone out of business. We're talking about companies that have been great. We're talking about companies that don't pay dividends. They're all in that mix, right? So it's kind of a mix of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And how has that done? The S&P has increased dividends by 9% per year for the last 40 years on average. That's a nice record.
Well, now, I'm very impressed company. With your knowledge, and I really rely, I listen to you, but I am interested in that. I'm in science myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people are not very knowledgeable about what you're talking about, the stock market and the dividends and the bonds and all, you know, on and on it goes. It needs to have them presented to them in a more simplified explanation of what happens to this, what happens to that. You know, you go into the details of it, I mean, which you're very aware of, and most people are not, and they just say, what can I do, right? Mm-hmm. So they come to you and they want your advice, but, you know, we have to put in such simple terms so they can understand it. That's just like I work in science. I work in physics. But if you talk about physics to the average person, they don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you, what you talk about. You're very knowledgeable, but if you can put it in more simplified terms, then the people will understand what they should buy and the risk of each one and what happens.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
But that's what they're worried about, really.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to a lot of people across the country. I deal with companies all over the country, the United States, and it's typically it's what they say. And so they're hanging on to their money, and then they have all these advertisements, buy silver and buy gold. Here's what your safe is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I deal with companies, copper company, in fact, the largest in the world in South America. But they're not too worried about, too so much worried about the copper mines. But the problem they have there in the South America is whether they become a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Exactly. It's a good point.
Like Robert, the biggest in the world are in Chile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I don't want to hold up your...
No, not at all. I appreciate your comments and very much, Robert. So I do. I'm up against a break, and I thank you so much, and thank you for the tip on that. We will continue to endeavor to keep it simple, as we the kiss theory, right? Keep it simple, stupid.
Yes.
Yep.
That's right.
Exactly.
You got it.
That's always been there. It's a good one. Robert, thanks for the call. Have a good day.
You're welcome, Mike.
Bye.
You too.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And in, on that particular point, I do want to point you to our YouTube channel. Look for Petso Financial on it. And we also, you can, if you're having any trouble finding it, you just call our office and we'll shoot you a link and it'll go right to it. But we've got Dow 30,000. It's a story of my 40 years investing. Okay. When the Dow crossed 30,000 and where it started and all the things. It's really very basic and I think one of the most important ones to kind of start with and understanding the long-term story. But, and this is going to put more pressure appropriately on Jennifer and Erica to be getting out more and more of the beginning investor videos that they've been working on. So we're going to get more and more of those out and trying to answer that question and keep it simple. Okay? Appreciate it very much. Got to take our final break here. It's 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO. We have plenty of time to take your calls. So ring them up. Yeah, we have time. All right. If nobody calls, that's all right, because I've been wanting to get to this today. What does good with inflation? The big question, the ultimate question. And so we're going to rally, you know, we're going to rattle off, you know, the six things that do good with inflation. And we're not going to be right about it at all, because it's just classic blah, 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 like commodities. Commodities do good with inflation. Temporarily, yes, they do. Over the long haul, we drive the cost down with technology. We use less of it to make everything, right? We, for example, aircraft are use much less aluminum and steel than they used to. I don't think they use any steel anymore, right? And to make them lighter because they're stronger. Well, less means less commodity consumption, allowing us to use more with the same resources we have and grow. We figure out how to get it out of the ground easier, more efficiently, deeper depths. They use robots down there now, right? Humans can't survive when the temperatures are 250 or 300 degrees because you're nearing the core of the Earth. But robots do fine. So all of these things change over for commodities. And to me, as I look at the history of my life, actually the history of history, commodities, inflation adjusted, go down. I mean, we're talking about lumber prices are hitting historic highs. Yeah. Shouldn't they be? And do I think they'll stay there? Nope, I don't. We'll chop down some trees. Maybe a year or two. But my point being is whatever is in our face is an automatic to do has already been done. Do I think I can go out and buy Weyerhaeuser, you know, the tree company, right? And that other people haven't thought of that. Yeah, I'm on the cutting edge of that one. Or the copper manufacturers, right? The copper miners around the world. That people haven't thought of that one, like, you know, 300 or 500% ago. Prices already reflect what we all know. Back to my investment, 10 investment commandments, which, by the way, is on our YouTube channel as well. It's also on our website. You go into that, and you have to realize that all of these things that we think we know. What I know isn't worth knowing. It's not. It's already priced in. We all think it is because we think we're smart about reading about what's already happened or is most certainly happening now. Prices are going up. Wow, that's a shocker. No way. I know what I'll do. Let me run out and buy. Right. You see what I'm saying? We already know. It's already happened. So if you want to pay a lot and hope it goes higher, that's fine. But just understand, you're not like being clever. Okay, that's all. I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm just saying let's understand price movement. So, one, okay, commodities. Real estate does okay. I think that has some real possibility here, right? Because it has regular income. But I don't want to go buy a single-family house in Boise, Idaho. Like, that hasn't been discovered. And go into a bidding war for it and think I'm cutting edge on that one. That does, because inflation's coming. I'm going to go buy a house. No. No. What about gold? Used to be. Not so much. Stick with stocks. Seriously. We'll talk more about it next week. I'm just totally out of time. We're going to talk about income alts as well. Okay? Thank you so much. Shoot us any comments over to PetsoFinancial.com. We'll talk to you next week.